From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 6th day of May. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today we'll talk about the weather forecast with Drew Lerner and the commodity markets with Jackie Bakes. We'll also hear some excerpts from this morning's webinar that Farm Credit put on with livestock producers from across the nation as it relates to COVID-19. May corn in Chicago today, a penny and a quarter lower at $3.11 3/4. July down 2 3/4 at $3.14 1/4, and December 3 lower at $3.31 1/4. July wheat off 3 1/4 cents at $5.17 1/2, and soybeans were down 7 3/4 at $5.30 1/2 on their settlement. November at $8.39 1/4, down 7 1/4. Live cattle futures finished the limit higher, up $3 at $89.47 1/2. Feeders were up 4.50 at $124.10, and lean hogs at $68.10, $1.95 higher. Jackie Vakes from Total Farm Marketing in Hollister, Missouri now joins us. Hey, Jackie, thanks for being with us this afternoon.
Oh, thank you.
Let's start with your usual set of numbers, please.
Okay. Well, we'll start with support and resistance. July corn support 308, 295, 274. Resistance 329, 351, 364. And the downtrend upline cross at 310. When you look at December, we have support at 325, 297, 293. Resistance 346, 361, and 394. And we have a channel. High end of the channel is 422. Low end is 325, which you see is resistance. The downtrend uptrend crosses at 330. When we look at beans, we've got July was supported 829, 820, and 805. Resistance 866, 903, and 926. And the channel there is 973 for a high, 815 for a low. And in July, the channel is getting wider. When we look at November, support 836, 812, and 751. Resistance 873, 891, and 909. Channel there, 1006 for a high, 830 for a low. And the crossover point is at 881. On the Dow Jones, the support is at 22,551 and 18,213. Resistance 23,881 and 25,230. We did break out of the downtrend line. In other words, we are above the downtrend line. So that's one thing that's good news. The dollar, unfortunately, has decided to rally. We've got support in the dollar at 98.2 and 97.8. Resistance at 100.07 and 100.63, excuse me, and the crossover is at 100.6. You know, it's probably going to be hard to rally commodities, Todd, until, you know, this dollar really finds a place to bottom. And the only way I think that's going to happen is it's going to require a much more stable world economy, because, you know, when people are concerned about their countries, they come here and buy our dollar because it's considered to be the safest place to be. So we'll see. Managed money, they just flipped over from last week. They went to 14,000 long on soft red wheat from 7,000. Corn, 152 short compared to 181. Beans, long 8 from short 10. Meal, short 7 from short 10. And soy oil, short 8 from short 13. So we can see compared to last week, they just switched and they moved their positions the opposite side. Export inspections, you want me to go on with that, Todd, or? Okay. Export inspections, we've got wheat exports running 5% ahead of a year ago, same as last week, 5%. And corn, 34 behind. Last week, it was 36 behind, so we've seen a little bit of improvement. Soybeans, 5 ahead. Last week, 6 ahead.
I'm going to guess that meal is DDG-related, so it's a replacement. So that's ethanol-related. However, that the bean oil, the other soybean product, is related to potentially just use at home of vegetable oil and diesel fuel, I would think, as well.
Well,
maybe.
And palm oil, because soy oil is used in salad dressings also, and, you know, if they can't get enough palm oil. And so, yeah, it's, you know, soy oil is one of the things that's just a huge market in China also. I mean, they use dramatic. I remember a number of years ago where they were actually knocking each other down at the grocery places to try and get the soy oil because it was so short. So it's, you know, it has a lot of different uses. Well, I was just going to say Crop Progress, I think, blew the doors off of a whole bunch of people. We looked at corn being at 51% planted, the average guess was only 48, and it was only 27 last week. So, boy, our guys really, really hammered this week. 23% of the soybeans in, spring wheat, 29% planted. That was a hair low compared to what the guesses were. And conditions on winter wheat basically right now are relatively stable. We were at 55 this week, good to excellent, 54 last week. So it never ceases to amaze a person at how, if we get the right kind of conditions, how fast we can actually get the crop into the ground.
What do you think about carry in the marketplace?
Well, it's interesting, Todd. As long as we're talking about beans, we'll go to beans first. If you look at the carry from July to November, July 20, November 20, it's 6 cents. We generally consider that to be 1 month's worth of carry. So what that says to me is there's still demand for beans, and they continue to believe that now. If you look at the July to July, July 20, July 21st, there's only 1 1/4 cent of carry.
Wow.
That's unbelievable.
Right.
And so, I mean, yes, wow, it's right. And now you look at corn, we're in a different situation. July to December, 17 cents. And if you look at July to July, it's 43 cents. So, you know, the July to July is saying for next year, you know, we figure we're going to have plenty of corn, so we're really not too worried about that. And the same thing if you look at, you know, the July to December. But on beans, it's an entirely different situation. I don't think I've ever seen a penny and a quarter, except during our highest times, you know, like in 2012 and things like that, where we had such an inverted market. But this is just, that was pretty amazing.
Hey, before we get to bouncing around the world, anything on crude oil that you've wanted to talk about that we haven't?
Oh, yes. I got a feeling that our friends in China are still crying yet because we all know and we all remember when we saw China, or we saw crude oil go down to negative $37.63 a barrel. Well, it turns out now that that slump came on Chinese investors. They figure it cost them about $1.4 billion. And the Bank of China settled those trades at negative $37.63 a barrel, which made some of the individual investors really angry because they just went in there and did it. And so that goes to show you how much freedom you have as a private person there.
Let's see, we've done the Western Hemisphere, the Eastern Hemisphere. Anything from the Southern Hemisphere before I let you go?
Yeah, there's a little. There's not an awful lot this week. They're having a lot of dry weather down in Brazil, and that's really impacting the safrinha corn across the country. And the saddest part is they had some what you would call beneficial rains, but it was accompanied by widespread hail. So that's never a good situation. Bean exports have been busy, and I'm not telling you this because I want to upset anybody, but I believe the supplies are going to start to decline probably in the June-July timeframe, which means that China will likely have to come to us, which is a good thing. There's no question about it. There's going to be less credit available, they believe, from the government. They have that plan called the Harvest Plan, low-interest loans to farmers, just because COVID has just kicked the pants out of the economy. So it's a mess. In fact, the Brazilian real set another record against the U.S. dollar again this week, so it's not good. Argentina, soy harvest is at 68% and corn at 37%. They are forecasting rain that could help the Paraná River. You know, Argentina's asked Brazil twice now to release more water into the Paraná, even though, you know, that might give them a temporary help, but they've really got to get rains to be able to do it, and it's extremely concerning because this is their dry time of year, basically. They're headed into the driest time. So I don't know if last week we talked about it a little bit, but Puerto Rosario is at the lowest level in 50 years and the lowest level that was ever recorded in April. So this was the shocking part. The water is at a half a meter compared to 0.4 meters, and the average is 4 meters, so 10 times more than what they have right now. I'm sure that they're very, very concerned because so much of their grain goes out of that Port of Rosario area.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. That is Jackie Vakes. She is with Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Well, this morning, Farm Credit, which is the overarching institution for some 72 different financial cooperatives across all 50 states and Puerto Rico, hosted a webinar to highlight the problems livestock producers in the nation are seeing from COVID-19. It included a poultry farmer from Louisiana, a beef producer from Kansas, and a pork producer from Minnesota. The pork producer's family-owned business also happens to own a portion of a pork processing company with a plant in Fremont, Nebraska. Now, if you follow Costco at all, you might recognize that town name, as it is the site of Costco's investment into a different processing facility dedicated to poultry for its baked chickens. The two plants, one pork and one poultry, are adjacent to each other. I posed a question to Mike Borboom during the webinar pertaining to any concerns he and his family have about laborers in the processing plant staying home or quitting work for fear of contracting COVID-19. Mike answered it.
We're trying to do everything to make the people in the plant feel safe and communicate the message as to what is all going on, what's happening, and as you're all aware, there's a lot of nationalities, a lot of languages spoken in plants, and trying to get that message clearly communicated clearly across to everyone has its challenges, and we're trying to do that. So far, we're fortunate in that operations have been able to run generally as normal, and we've been able to add Saturday harvests. However, there's constraints there. We cannot run 7 days a week. We may be able to slaughter the pigs fast enough, but to get them packaged and to get them out into pork products as the final cuts is difficult, especially given the huge shift that's taken place from snack products to food service to shifting almost everything exclusively to retail.
One of the problems facing meatpackers is the uptick in COVID-19 infections surrounding the plants and the fear contracting the disease brings with it. Last week, President Trump authorized USDA to use the Defense Production Act to stabilize the protein supply chain. Secretary Perdue issued letters to all U.S. governors and to stakeholders last night detailing what this means. Essentially, it says plants should follow CDC and OSHA guidelines to remain operational. Well, that's likely to give them some legal liability coverage. It also told them to email a plan of action to USDA outlining how plants would be brought back online meeting these guidelines if closed, and left open the possibility of further actions to be taken via DPA if needed. Here are the closing comments from the producer panel Farm Credit hosted. Remember, these are real-life livestock producers. We'll start with Mike Borboom from Minnesota, who works with his mom and dad and two siblings, one brother and one sister. They have 45 employees and 40 contract growers. Those are other farmers that raise pigs for them.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just how fast this situation needs to be addressed. It's changed really day by day. We're finding out that we may not get loads, or we may get loads the day of, 4 to 5 hours in advance notice. And I know the government it wants to help, but we need to move. They need to move, and everybody needs to move as rapidly as possible to try and turn this ship away from this crisis. And if we don't react quickly, America's farmers, not just pork farmers, but all farmers, are going to feel this, and it is going to be very hard on rural America. I'm a young person, and talking with older generations, there's never been anything that looks as potentially devastating as what this is.
Well, the beef cattle producer on the call was from Tiffany Cattle in Harrington, Kansas. Shane Tiffany's father managed the feedlot that was built on the former Army Air Base that trained pilots to fly B-29s during World War II. The air base closed in 45. Shane, in a 2015 K-State Extension blog post, said, "We sit on 42 acres of concrete. Our feed alleys are the old runways. Our feed bunks and waters are on concrete, too." At the time, Shane and his brother, Sean, who had purchased the feedlot in 2007, were feeding more than 15,000 beef cattle. Here's how Shane Tiffany closed out today's discussion.
I think this has brought to light some issues that exist in the food supply chain. It's shocking, somewhat surreal, really, that you can walk into grocery stores and see empty shelves. As far as a national food security, that's paramount to be able to feed the American people. And I think that we need to, as an industry, I think the government obviously needs to help us. We're not a sector of the economy that comes asking for much help very often, but in this situation, it's desperately needed. We find ourselves on the front lines of this crisis. After that happens, I think it's incumbent upon all of the protein industry to use this as a catalyst for true change for the better. We're identifying some problems that exist in the supply chain and in the industry as a whole. We need to make sure that we act upon them and solve some of those issues so that this doesn't happen in the future.
Shane Tiffany, during the webinar, mentioned a couple of points. He doesn't think futures prices at the CME Group in Chicago accurately reflected the deep discounts being paid to livestock producers for their animals, and he's concerned about consolidation and foreign ownership of the packing industry. Smithfield is owned by a Chinese company, and JBS USA is owned by a Brazilian company. The other producer on today's Farm Credit webinar hails from Louisiana, where he raises poultry for what's called an integrator. It's a company that owns different parts of the supply chain. In this case, the birds, the processor, and the brand of Foster Farms. Butch Sensley has 21 broiler houses. That's where you raise chickens. He's pretty upset that none of the $2 trillion care package, which included $16 billion for direct payments to farmers, including money allocated to beef, pork, and dairy producers, did not have anything in it for poultry producers like him.
Yes, I know the government is trying to help. I wish they would really consider that poultry is a one large number of protein that's produced in this country. All areas might not be considered having the same problems, but look at the areas that it's having an actual problem with the supply chain. Not only does it affect the poultry industry, but if it affects in our area in the state of Louisiana here where I'm from, but a lot of the feed that is actually going to these facilities actually goes right to the poultry plants. And if we have a problem with the poultry plants in production, we're going to actually have problems with feedstock. It just carries on. So I wish they would consider looking into the poultry industry and see how it actually devastates farmers in our area that's not looking for a handout, but just looking for a way to continue to survive and produce proteins for our country.
Sensley also made a case for the meat processing plant workers to receive hazard pay or bonuses or some form of incentive to reward them for staying on the line, even as COVID-19 infections are on the rise in their tightly knit communities. Here's how I bottom line what has and is happening along the supply chain. As the nation locked down, voluntarily and then by state order, the supply chain was not agile enough to push proteins from 54% purchased for consumption outside the home to the grocery store instead. The processing lines and distribution system couldn't handle the switch. People rushed to the stores and supplies ran short quickly. Things haven't rebounded fully. Now, just as people are moving around and states are opening up, the virus has made its way into the labor force that processes beef, pork, and poultry. The plants have slowed or shut down to try and clean up. That's caused concern in D.C. and in the media. Meanwhile, the community spread continues in what I'll call rural America hotspots, and the workforce has gotten scared. This last part may be the most important and the place where a great deal of empathy is needed. Whole extended families are scared. They need reassurance and support from the nation. Honestly, I'm not talking about D.C. I mean from us. Like the first responders and the nurses and the doctors and everyone else in the medical profession, these laborers are facing an unknown. They're going to the line to support their whole extended family, all the time wondering if, when they come home, they might bring the virus with them. It's no wonder they're scared. America needs them on the line. And finally, what does it mean for the meat supply? Well, the CoBank analyst on the Farm Credit webinar thought maybe a 20% average hike in the retail cost of meat this summer. We're now joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to take a look at the weather forecast. Thanks, Drew, for being with us. Lots better here today than it was the last couple of days. Can you tell me about the forecast for us going forward, planting conditions, and then I know producers are going to be really scared a little bit, especially in the northeastern part of the Corn Belt, about this freeze-frost line that may be coming in Saturday.
Yeah, boy, that's a mouthful right there. We do have a lot going on. It looks like the harvest weather will be okay. I think it is all about the cold right now. We do have one disturbance that will be moving across the Midwest as we go from tomorrow into Friday that will produce rain across the west and southern parts of the region, and it'll be a significant enough event that it will shut down some farming activity. And then the cold comes in right behind it, and boy, the midday model runs, they just even a little bit colder than maybe last night's run. I think it's overdone, but we're still looking at frost and freeze potentials in just about all of the Midwest on Friday or Saturday morning. With Saturday, actually I probably should say Saturday and Sunday. On Friday morning, we'll see the cold in the Dakotas and Nebraska, western Nebraska. Saturday, we will see a frost all the way down through the Ohio River Valley. And on Sunday morning, we'll see the frost occurring all the way into North Carolina and parts of Virginia. So freezes will most likely occur in most of Minnesota, a large part of Iowa, except the southwest. Probably the northern two-thirds of Illinois, the northern three-fourths of Indiana, and probably most of Ohio, although part of Ohio will see the freezes split between Saturday morning and Sunday morning. I think at this point, Saturday morning is probably going to be a little bit too early for the coldest temperatures, and Sunday morning, the high might be a little bit farther to the southeast, so we might spare a little bit of Ohio from the colder conditions. But some of the upper Midwest will see temperatures in the lower to middle 20s. The lower Midwest will see upper 20s and lower 30s. And there will be some areas that just stay in the lower 30s, but those are going to be mostly near the Ohio and lower Missouri rivers.
Are we concerned about winter wheat?
We are concerned about winter wheat. It's heading and booting across a fair amount of the lower Midwest. Temperatures below 30 degrees for more than 2 hours always raises the potential for some damage in this scenario. The farther south you go, the more advanced the crops are. So when you get down into areas near the Ohio River and into Kentucky, we're probably flowering in that area. And any freeze would be bad for those crops. So a little bit of damage is expected, really, for corn and for wheat. For the corn, you know, the growing point is below the soil in most cases, so the crop will come back. It's a question of whether or not anyone wants to wait for that, and so we'll kind of see what happens down the road.
Black Sea area, we've been concerned about winter wheat there and dry conditions in particular. Has that gotten any better?
Well, it has gotten somewhat better. I think the situation right now is still a little tenuous for some parts of the region. Russia's southern region has not seen a lot of rain, and they are still very dry. Also, parts of Kazakhstan are still quite dry. And I don't see a lot of rain coming up for either of those two areas. So they will continue to limp along. And as soon as it gets warm over there, and it's been kind of cool, but as soon as it gets warm, it's going to really have a significant impact. Those crops will become instantly stressed, and so we'll keep an eye on that. I don't see a lot of heat coming up for a while, but maybe 10 days from now it might be a different story. For Romania and Bulgaria and Ukraine, we did do relatively well with rain, with the exception of southeastern Ukraine. It's still very dry there. They had a little bit of moisture, but not a lot. But those areas from Romania and Bulgaria into western and central Ukraine, there was enough relief there that the topsoil has improved quite a bit. And we still have low subsoil moisture, so without follow-up precipitation, it's just a matter of time before that area gets a little too dry once again.
What's happening with the safrinha corn crop in South America?
Yeah, today we're going to see a few showers in some of that region. It's been very dry. We just went back and looked at the last few months, and certainly February and March, way below average precipitation in some of those areas. And certainly this month, or the last 30 days, has certainly been the drier bias even more so. So there's not much moisture there in the subsoil to rely on. So the crop is definitely limping along. It's in the midst of its reproduction now and will continue to do so for the next week to 10 days, maybe 2 weeks. And that puts a lot of pressure on the rain machine, which at the moment isn't doing much. We have a frontal system coming through the area today that will produce a little bit of rain, but it's probably less than a half inch and very sporadic, not likely to make a big difference. Next week, Tuesday through Thursday, we might have a better opportunity for rain, a little bit more generalized precipitation. But some of that may be coming a little bit too late, and some of this crop has already suffered quite a bit while it's been reproducing, at least the early crop. So it's a late crop now that we're trying to save. And it's a big question as to whether or not they'll get enough moisture in time next week.
Hey, thanks, Drew. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. We talked with him on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online and listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Just click and play right out of the website. Otherwise, of course, you can always find us as a podcast, an Apple Podcast, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the NPR One app, any place that you look for podcast, you're likely to find the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and the Opening Market Report. Have a great afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.